On the Pilot TV podcast this week, we are summoning some big Dickens energy with Stephen Knight's new BBC adaptation of Great Expectations, hopping on the wagon with Roisin Gallagher for ITV's sobriety comedy The Dry, and working up an appetite with the return of Yellowjackets, now showing on Paramount Plus. Plus, we find out what the Jefferson is going on with David Diggs as he joins us to chat all about Apple's extrapolations. I'm James Dyer, and welcome to the Pilot TV podcast, your essential guide to every show that matters, and a podcast that would like to ask for a brief moment of silence now as we collectively mourn Disney's Willow TV series that will not, in fact, be returning after being cut down in its prime. A weeping Willow, if you will. Yeah, indeed. A rather inexplicable turn, I would say, for a pretty decent show. Wouldn't you both say this?
Oh, yeah. Like, Kay watched religiously episode of nerdy fantasy spin-off TV thing Willow. I mean, come on. I didn't think it was that great, I have to say. It was fine. It was fine.
Boyd was behind the decision for it getting axed.
Yeah.
No, I was not. Do you know what? I've actually got a funny Willow story to tell, which I cannot tell right now because
it's embargoed.
It's embargoed. Yeah, my anecdote is embargoed. It's about awards and stuff, but I'll tell it eventually in a few weeks.
So
time.
When you're able to tell us, you will tell us a Willow story.
Ooh. Yeah. James.
When will you be able to tell us? I want to hear it now.
James, set your alarm.
Not for a while. I'll tell you off air.
Damn it.
This is just completely annoying. People are going to be furious. Yeah. But yeah.
Boyd has a secret Willow story. Does it involve Taylor Swift?
Sadly not, no.
Life is a Willow and it bends right to your will, unless, of course, you are Disney Plus, in which case you'll cancel the shit out of it. Nice to see that it's not just Netflix going berserk with the fantasy cancellation hammer, though, so I guess there's that. Anyway, you've heard them already, because they just spoke. But joining me today for more fun and games are my regular two square-eyed companions, Boyd Hilton and Kay Ribeiro.
Hello.
Hi. So, let's jump into it. What have you been watching? Kay, Willow, presumably. Anything else?
Yes, James. Now, I'm not looking to go into any kind of discussion about this, but I have devoured The Bay.
Yes.
Nope, that's enough for you, thank you. And that's why I asked to postpone the podcast by 12 minutes, because I was just
Oh my God! Yes. Was that the reason?
Yes.
You sold me a false bill of goods. You told me, I've got 17 minutes left of the show. I thought you meant one of the shows you were watching for this podcast. Mm-hmm. I didn't realise you were fucking getting your total Bayhem on. Like, what is that all about?
Did you not notice I purposely never said what show I was watching?
That is telling.
No, I wanted to finish it. I was on the final episode and we had an hour between recording podcasts and I was like, oh my God, I can watch it. I had 17 minutes left. So I did postpone this recording. And I just want to say, I thoroughly enjoyed it. It's really, really good. The family were being targeted, and that's not a spoiler, but I know everyone was gripped
when you see what this is now, Boyd? You see what this is?
Yeah.
All of this was Kay's way of positioning to make the point that you were wrong and she was right. That's what this whole thing is about.
No. She's admitting she was wrong.
No, what? No, I said they were being targeted.
Oh, gaslighting from Boydie. Excellent work.
What? This is memory.
No. What I mean is, what you've just said is, it's by watching these further episodes that you know that. Spoiler alert, by the way. Spoiler alert. At the time, in the first fucking episode that we were reviewing, we didn't know whether they were being targeted or not.
They were obviously being targeted. And also...
She's still... This is honestly...
It wasn't a random attack.
This is Kay's stubbornness in brilliant, full, vivid detail.
Look. And also in the press release, that's how it was phrased. That's the other thing. I was being endorsed by ITV press office. Anyway, listen. Just to say, I really enjoyed it. And particularly on the focus on DCI Manning and his personal life, played by Daniel Ryan.
Who can forget DCI Manning?
No, he's brilliant. He's so good. And it's anyone who watched last season, James.
Dan Ryan.
Yeah. Yeah, that's what I said, right?
Oh, I didn't hear you say the actual.
Yes, I believe you said DCI Manning, but I could be wrong.
He does DCI Manning.
I didn't. I can't wait for anyone to listen back to this and hear me say Daniel Ryan. Anyway, anyone who watched last season will have known that, you know, he had a terrible time. His marriage disintegrated and it was horrible to watch. So anyway, just seeing him grasp at happiness again is heartwarming. I won't say which way it goes. Yes. So love that. Love The Bay. And also, because of the podcast, I have watched 5 episodes of You, which we are talking about in our spoiler special.
Yes, indeed. Our You spoiler special, which will be around when does this go out? Monday. Actually, go out tomorrow, Tuesday.
Mm. Wow, and nice. 11 episodes of Yellowjackets.
Ooh. Mm-hmm. Good work, Kay. Did you storm through the entire first season?
Yeah, so since the last podcast, 16 episodes of material have been consumed.
Oh, impressive.
Actually, no, ignore that. 22 because six of the bay. So I have been working hard, guys. Yeah.
That is solid work. Because obviously we've been discussing Yellow Jackets. I did say it's something you might enjoy. Now, you sent us a text on the Pilot TV WhatsApp saying, "Oh, guys, Yellow Jackets is scary."
Yeah.
Which I think was something that you hadn't been prepared for. Am I right in saying?
Yeah, because, and we'll save this for when we talk about Yellow Jackets. But yeah, I was surprised because this isn't by nature a show I would usually watch. And so there were times within the first episode where I was like, because you particularly, James, were like, "Kay, you should watch this. You're going to really like it." And I was like, "Oh, I trust James." Well, actually, no, that's wrong. No, I don't know why I said that. You know, he's not a complete moron. So he knows me. And I was like, and then when all this stuff started happening, I was like, "I curse you, James."
But you must have enjoyed it because knowing you as I do not believe your work ethic would extend to watching 11 episodes of a show you didn't enjoy. So.
You're besmirching my reputation, James. No, but it's true. Like, I absolutely just I just went through the 10 episodes so quickly in 2 days, and then I watched the 11th episode, which is obviously the first or the second series. So yeah, I can confirm I did enjoy it. But we'll come to that.
We will come to Yellow Jackets later on. Okay, that's exciting. I won't ask you if you've watched anything else, because frankly, you've watched more than enough. Boydie, can you compete?
Oh yeah, of course. Yeah.
Well, first come on, then. Bring it mention, on.
No, I haven't watched that many things, actually. I mean, I probably have, but I haven't written them all down. what I have watched is The Last of Us, of course, the finale, which I'm sure is being discussed on the spoiler special I was invited to take part in.
Yeah, that's right. Yes. You can hear all about that in the spoiler special last week that Boyd wasn't a part of.
Good.
Two spoiler specials I put up.
Two?
Yeah.
Wow.
Us chatting and then me chatting to the stars and creators.
Oh, okay. Yeah, good. I'll be listening to that. No, it was very good. And
is that all you got to say? That's it. It was very good.
Well, no, I'm just getting started.
I thought you were moving on. Carry on.
If I'd been invited to take part in the spoiler special podcast, then you would have heard my full views.
Right. Oh, okay. It makes me sad each time you say that. And the thing is, you have mentioned about 93 sad, times now. So it's like,
don't feel sad. I know, I'm fine. I'm not bothered. It's fine.
Okay.
But it was very good. No, it was excellent. And it was extraordinarily violent, wasn't it? That's what I would say.
You think?
I mean, not gory. We had a whole side discussion, didn't we? Someone asked us on Twitter whether it was too gory to watch, and it's not so much that. I mean, there are gory moments which I think which you forgot about, but but in terms of pure incredible violence, that last act of that finale.
Yeah, there's a body count to it, certainly.
There's a body count, yeah.
Yeah.
And it's really, but it's brilliantly done. In fact, it's brilliantly handled in the sense that you don't necessarily see that much gore or whatever, or vivid detail. But what he does is quite a sequence, yeah. Chaos. Okay.
Question, is it more gory and violent than Gangs of London, which is my benchmark?
Not okay, even fine. Close.
Gangs of London is deliberately sets out to be, I think this is safe to say, the goriest TV show ever, pretty much. I mean, it's absolutely one of its raison d'être is to embrace the gore fully. I mean, there's one bit in season two, wasn't there, where a guy gets shot in the eye. Do you remember that bit, James?
I didn't watch all of season two.
Okay. Yeah, I'm pretty sure there's a bit where he gets shot in the eye and they have an effect showing the effect that such a thing would have on the whole head of this person. So in vivid detail, you are shown the explosion of this guy's head. I mean, honestly, it is horrendous,
Because I think like Gangs of London is a horror series masquerading as a crime series.
Yeah.
Whereas
The
Last of Us is kind of like a character drama masquerading as a horror series, because it's not really, I think, horror. It's all about character. Love the way Kay is nodding, having never watched another episode. I loved the finales.
No,
okay.
Piss off. You're such a shit today. No, particularly. He's been very giddy before we started recording. Anyway. I've got an eye on you. I'm keeping an eye on you. No, I was nodding sagely because I thought, actually, that's a really good explanation of it. It makes me want to watch it more when you said it's character drama. Because makes sense.
Character-led. And we're not going to say any spoilers here for people who obviously haven't seen it yet. And also for Kay, because I'm determined to get Kay to watch it, because I genuinely think you will really enjoy it. Because it is all about this character journey. And it all comes to fruition in the final episode. I have many, many things to say about it. Luckily for you, I've said them all in the spoiler special, so you don't have to hear me bang on about it. But there is a moral question in the final episode, which proved very divisive upon the game's release in 2013, and I think has been part of the discussion post the final episode as well. But it's a really interesting one, and obviously I got the showrunners and I got Pedro Pascal and Bella Ramsey on that when we spoke. But yeah, it's a hell of a show. At the moment, my shows of the year list, that and Happy Valley are just like leagues ahead of everything else. It's just where those two settle at the end of this year. That's going to be the question.
Yeah, that will be a difficult one. It will be between three shows, those two, and Succession. But thankfully, you don't watch Succession, so you won't be able to get involved in that.
Yes, of course, Succession.
Of course it will. Of course it will, you absolute bellend.
I'm sure it'll be in the top 20 somewhere.
Oh, do not even.
Oh, my God. Yeah. Jesus Christ.
Unforgotten as well. There's loads of great shows so far.
Unforgotten
anyway.
Is very good. Yes, yes, that's true.
Anyway, are we focusing that on March? I think not. We should just focus on now.
It's a side issue. Well, I will just say about that moral dilemma, though, which you're right, it is a very interesting moral dilemma. That moral dilemma has, and I'm not, this is no way a diss on The Last of Us, but I read some things talking about it as if, like, you know, no show of this genre had ever addressed such. I'm like, come on, it's in like Doctor Who, Star Trek,
of
you know,
course,
like pretty much every, you know.
I mean, if you, frankly, I honestly, and I think this is absolutely true, if you were to come up with any bit of drama, it has already been done in either Star Trek or Doctor Who or both, right? Yeah. Like, because between them, those two franchises have covered basically everything that could ever happen to anyone ever, because they are very broad. And we talked about in terms of what they've done and the questions they ask and the boundaries they've pushed over the years have actually been incredible. It's, you know, small-minded people like, hey, obviously don't watch these shows, but if they did, then, you know, of course you would
that look. James,
if looks could
James,
kill.
Don't poke the beast, okay?
Yeah. That's it. She's like, you've had your fun now. Like, that's all I've four given, lives used up now. Yeah, the next one is it.
You've had two strikes, three you're out, okay?
That's it. I'm done.
But my tuppence halfpenny worth, or whatever the phrase is.
Your tuppence Middleton worth.
Tuppence Middleton worth. About that use of that dilemma in The Last of Us, in the TV though. I haven't played the game, obviously, because I don't play games. But it wasn't so much the moral dilemma itself that was interesting. It was fine. It was the execution of his answer to that moral question that was extraordinary. And that was fantastic. So, with due kudos to everyone involved in that show, because they haven't had enough kudos yet.
You should listen to the spoiler special, Boyd. I think you'd enjoy
it. Of course I will.
Boyd, don't listen to it. Don't put yourself through that.
I'm not proud. I'm not proud, Kat. I don't need to be in every spoiler special discussion of TV show. It's
fine. Can I derail this podcast very quickly and just ask you something, Boydie? Have you listened to the Empire podcast from last week yet?
Of course I have.
I was going to ask.
Did you listen to it while going to sleep?
I did literally listen to it while going to sleep, and it worked brilliantly to the point where I was like, "Oh, was there a vague awareness of in the middle of this? There was some mention of me and the ASGR? What's it called that thing?
ASMR?
ASMR."
What did you do? What BQDM. Did you actually say?
We waited until halfway through the podcast because I wanted Boyd to be like properly drowsy, like drifting off, and then we started programming him with subliminal messages.
It was fantastic. Yeah.
I bet Chris was well on board for that.
Yeah, very much so.
He seemed quite on board for it, actually. I thought he seemed to enjoy it.
I was being serious.
It was fantastic. Thank you. I should do it in every episode, by the way, obviously.
We should have read out the words that they say to the Winter Soldier, you know, to turn him on. Not turn him on, literally. Not in a sexy way. Not in a sexy way.
Gosh.
You know, it's like, was it longing, please rusted, furnace, daybreak, 17, benign, 9, homecoming? I don't know.
Okay.
I don't know. Okay. This has gone in
Kate
a weird direction
talking
for me.
About, by the way, yeah.
No.
Exactly. No.
I just said subliminal message, turn on Boyd, and I was like, no.
Steady. Yeah. And finally.
Freight car.
Actually, not finally at all. One of our regular listeners and correspondents, Annika Ruff on Twitter, asked me specifically whether I'd watched enough of Fleischman is in Trouble and whether I got to episode 7, the famed episode 7, which is also has its own kind of moral dilemmas in that, or at least very interesting philosophical questions. And I have watched it, and it is fantastic. It's absolutely brilliant, that episode. It's a classic episode of TV. Episode of 7 of Fleischman's in Trouble. All I'll say about it, because it's spoiler heavy, is that it's a Claire Danes like masterwork.
Ooh,
it's a masterclass. Yeah, she is incredible.
She's very, very good.
Yeah. And it's a really interesting, you should definitely watch it, Kate.
I haven't seen that yet.
Yeah, it's definitely worth catching up with. So, absolute shout out to Annika about Fleischman's in 7. And finally, Servants, James, I'm not sure if you were, the finale, the all absolute finale of finales of Servant was on a Friday on Apple TV Plus, as we're now recording this. You'll be able to listen to it as this goes out on Monday. And I watched the finale, and it is, and I absolutely loved it. And I loved the last three episodes of, I think Servant is the most underrated thing on TV, pretty much. I think it's M. Night Shyamalan's absolute true masterpiece. I think it's better than any of his films, possibly excluding maybe like the first two films, but it's definitely better than like his last five or six films.
It's hard to argue with you.
Have you watched this final season?
I haven't. No, I finished the whole of season one, and I think I stopped midway through season two, so I'm quite far behind.
Twat. You should carry on.
Twat.
Do you know what? Very Roy Walker, say what you see. Carry on.
Yeah, exactly. But this final season has been fantastic. It's a brilliant kind of horror thriller, conspiracy, cult, religious festival of kind of weird, bizarre, perverse treats. And it really pulls off. I think it's one of those shows where you're thinking, it's such a great idea. Basically, you know, the whole idea is that this woman has a tragic loss of her baby boy. And they deal with that by giving her a fake doll, one of these incredibly realistic dolls. And then this nanny comes into their lives, bringing in an actual baby to take the place of this baby that died. And the way that plays out, and then it involves she's part of this massive cult religion that's really weird and creepy and horrible. And then it just goes, it's quite mad in various points, but this final season's had so much going on. It's been brilliant to watch. And I thought they did a really good job with the finale. So Servant should be much more talked about.
How much of it did they have planned out when they did the first season? Do you know?
I think they had quite a lot of it planned out because I remember M. Night Shyamalan said they planned on doing like 50 episodes. In the end, they did 40 for four seasons. Mm. So I think they kind of abridged it quite rightly. I think it would have been milking it. But I think they had quite a lot of it planned out. Yeah, I'm not sure if they had the whole thing, but I think certainly the cult, the pivot to the cult element of it, which happens at the end of that first season, I think was a big thing that they planned on bringing in. Yeah.
Interesting. I was saying this to someone the other day. Like, we were talking about like what they were like, well, you know, I need a streaming service. Watch it. I was like, get Apple. I'm telling you, not enough people. Yeah. Like, all this good stuff on Apple. Like, if there were any one streaming service that I wanted to just like subscribe to for the summer and just binge it on, I would just go through everything on Apple just because there's so much amazing stuff. Remember Defending Jacob? I know we do this every few episodes. We'll go through raptures of all the Apple shows, but so much great stuff is on there. I get so excited about it. Apple are not paying me to say that. In fact, ever.
Don't lie. He's got an Apple tattoo.
That's it. Yeah. Well, this is my whole back, like Alan Partridge style. It's just a big Apple logo.
Yeah. They're definitely not paying me after the extrapolations review.
No, absolutely not. I was going to say. Yeah. Speaking of which, it's time to have David Diggs. No, it's right. We'll have David on a little bit later. We get a little bit of distance from Boydie. We can't have the two of them in the same room. It's exciting. Obviously, nothing on Apple can hold a candle to my beloved C, but there's other good stuff on there as well.
I had a nice chat with Stephen Boydie? Knight this week. I had a nice chat with Stephen Knight
this
week. Yeah, the Great Expectations.
Was this the Great Expectations?
Launch. Yeah,
very nice. Did you host a Q&A?
Hosted the Q&A, exactly. Yeah, yeah. I know you've interviewed him quite a few times, haven't you?
His process for writing is very much just make shit up as he goes along. Obviously, it doesn't really work when he's adapting Dickens. So, I'll be curious now how
we'll
he did that.
I'll tell you more about that later when we review Great Expectations. Just something
I will look forward to it with great expectation.
Let him wait.
Okay, well, fine. I'm going to go straight into shilling for Apple again by saying that I finished the first season of For All Mankind last night. Near feature length, hour and 15 minute finale to the first season. A lot's going on the moon. That's a shit is getting real on the moon at this point. That's what I'm going to say. I'm getting on with it. Someone did say to me on Twitter that the formula for All Mankind is like five or six episodes of slightly dry, slow paced period soap opera, followed by it all kicking off in space. So now I have that in my head. Now I'm watching it. That may or may not be true. We're going to find out. But he said every season is just that. And then it all kicks off in the last few episodes. So we'll
that is fair.
We'll see.
That is fair. Yeah. Except I'd say the Mars season, which was the last season, wasn't it? I think. It's all a blur to me. That has big space stuff going on right at the beginning.
Oh, good.
So
good.
There you go. Yeah.
Well, I'm in with the characters. Like I am on board with all the characters. I'm very much enjoying all the space carnage as well. It's great. I'm liking it a lot. So yes, very much enjoying For All Mankind. Ted Lasso, I've plowed through the first four episodes now. It's made available to me and I'm enjoying it lots. It's still walking that bittersweet line between comedy and drama. But it's sort of some episodes it veers more into comedy, get a little bit of pathos here. I'm enjoying the Nate the Great storyline. Obviously, no spoilers here. Won't be talking about that. But yeah, it remains.
We can no longer call him Nate the Great, I'm afraid.
We can't. Can we call him the Wonder Kid?
He's gone to Nasty Nate. Yeah.
Nasty Nate. Okay, yeah. Not Nate the Great. Nasty Nate. Yeah, it is good. But it is interesting how... Well, I was listening to the interviews that we did last week where Brett Goldstein was talking about how they wrote season two of Ted Lasso before season one had aired. And that totally changed the way I thought about the show, because I always thought season two, because it felt like a very different headspace. So I wonder whether, you know, they could have had no idea that season one would have become this touchstone for everyone during lockdown. And everyone saw it as this pure sort of unsullied source of joy and hope through this very bleak period. And then they hit us with this slightly downbeat and depressive second season. I thought it was really funny. I thought that was an interesting wrinkle.
In a way, it's probably good to do. I mean, we might have got a bit bored of it being so upbeat and, you know, I think it was right to... No, but it's true, isn't it? Like, I can guarantee if it went on for three seasons like that, you'd be like, yeah, I'm kind of like, you know, same, too positive.
Yeah. Yeah, I like that Ted remains, you know, at his very core, still the same person. It's just that I think the cracks are showing, because he's always had that kind of neuroses and the drama of his life. I mean, the whole setup of the show is he's come to the UK to get away from his marriage, which is falling apart. So it's always kind of been there, but it's definitely come closer to the fore as the show's gone.
And there had
on.
To be some depth to him as well, right?
Yeah.
So they had to explore that.
But as you've said, his son in the show can jump in the sea. So.
See what I mean, right? And that was just based on that first episode of the new series. Yeah. It's like, oh, he's so irritating. And especially when you compare him to Roy's niece, who's fantastic.
Who is great. Yeah. Yes. But yeah, so I've watched more Ted. And also another Apple show has got screeners available. I'm not going to say what it is. Anyone who listens to me bang on about stuff on this podcast can probably guess. But something exciting has got screeners on the Apple portal, which I plan to avail myself of upon the weekend.
Do you know what's hilarious? I'm supposedly, Boyd and I are supposedly meant to listen during the podcast, but clearly we don't because I'm clueless as to what you're talking about.
but you didn't listen. We know you didn't listen to it at all for like the first
time. Oh, I thought he meant this year.
This year. I've been talking about it. I think I might have talked about it last week or the week
Go
before.
Go on then, Boyd.
Yes.
What's he talking about?
I don't know. Well, wait a minute. Is it science fiction?
It is, in fact, Sheep, Boyd, the famous sheep show. We'll just leave that there.
Fine. Wool.
Wool's not on Apple. Wool's on something else, isn't it?
No. Also, I've got screeners for The Power, which I really want to watch this weekend, we'll be reviewing on next week's show.
Oh, I've watched some of that already.
Yeah, so I haven't watched any of that yet,
I've beaten you to that. I've watched the first episode.
You have? So I'm interviewing Toni Collette and John Leguizamo for that on Monday.
Consider yourself Trump, Boyd.
There you go.
And I think that is about it from me. So that's what we've been watching. Shall we move on to a listener question? And the listener question we chose today elicited the following response from Kay. No. So listen. Make of that what you will.
Oh my God, I can't. Shall I tell you what? There should be some confidentiality clause about the WhatsApp group. And can I just say to the person, because you're now obviously going to read out the question, it wasn't that... Let me give context. Go on. Right, I'm going to get the WhatsApp up. Because, right, James did a screenshot of the question and then said, ?" And I went, ?" ?" Because I didn't have an answer for it. So it wasn't that I didn't like it. It's just I'm not very filmy and I couldn't think of an answer. But we're going with it. And it was a good question. So, yeah.
This comes from Paul McGinley, someone who Kay hates. And...
Don't try and get
it's unclear
trolled.
Why. Sorry, Paul. All I can do is apologise.
Paul, I don't.
Paul, the hated man, says, "Hi, question for the postbag. As Willow, sorry, poor Willow, rest in peace, White Men Can't Jump, Interview the Vampire, It and Grease have all been mentioned to TV shows. Is there any other movie you would like to see get the peak TV treatment? I'm thinking The Running Man, Boys in the Hood, Predator, Police Academy, Time Cop, an interesting mix there. It's a good question. I would say saying that it has received the TV treatment feels like a little bit of an inversion, because obviously it was on TV before it was a film, and obviously a book before both. But that one aside, it depends, I
but
guess.
Are they
on
making...
You,
aren't they making
yes,
a spin-off?
They are. Yes,
yes, right.
They
that's
are.
What it's referring
it's
to.
Gone TV, film, then TV again. Yes, but yeah, I'm right. saying it. Bellend. Yes, sure.
yeah, Boyd, you go.
Maybe yeah. it's me that hates Paul. It's hard to say.
I think it's you. The Paul hater.
I am the Paul hater. Yes. It basically depends, Kay. Just to assist with this, mm-hmm. it's what you want from a TV show versus what you want from a film, right? So I always think things with like an interesting bit of world building mythology. I know how you do love your world building mythology. So something like John Wick, like that's getting the TV spin-off. That makes total sense because there's a lot of mythology to sift through that you can build out upon to tell a larger story on a bigger canvas. That makes sense to me. Like, it lends itself perhaps to long-form storytelling. That's if they go down a more narrative route, because if you've seen the most recent John Wick, it isn't exactly full of story, though it is full of spectacle. And I think that kind of spectacle maybe wouldn't work as well if that was all the TV show was. But you know what I'm going to say? I'm going to say Harry Potter. Controversial subject matter. I know people don't like Harry Potter so much anymore, but I'm using it as an example because for me it's fantasy, right? So fantasy stuff, I just don't think works as films. I think it always works better as a TV show because you need time to tell these big stories.
The films did quite well though, didn't they? To be fair.
I mean, so I've heard.
Yeah.
But,
I know what you mean. Yeah, I mean, they're going to do it, aren't they? I mean, it's only a matter of time before the Harry Potter TV series, surely. I guess, it'll be more spun off from the play, won't it? I think probably when he's a bit older.
Well, but The Cursed Child, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, so that's the interesting question. It's like whether, because I always assumed that would get made into like a film at some point.
Mm.
Now I'm actually thinking it probably won't, because I don't imagine that the film cast would come back to do it. So maybe it will eventually spin off from whatever TV thing they ultimately do with it. Who knows?
But they can recast it, don't they?
They could recast it, yeah. Yes. And in fact, may well have to. But things like that. So for me, it is always things like that. It's big thing, big stories that have been crunched down for the screen, which should be uncrunched.
Obviously, I haven't gone down that route at all. But I've gone down the route of, do you know what? I literally looked at some, I was thinking, what are my favourite films of all time? And which of them wouldn't be too annoyed about if they tried to make a TV spin-off series on? And I've come up with Midnight Run. One of the greatest films of all time with Charles Grodin and Robert De Niro. I'm surprised it hasn't been turned into, and I think there was talk of it at one point. There were three terrible made-for-TV sequels to it, by the way, I think in the 90s, but they're not even worth thinking about. And obviously, Charles Grodin is no longer with us, sadly, and that film was built around the unique chemistry between the two of them, and it is a brilliant script. Superbly directed. Everything, it's just a perfect film, really. But I still think it would be worth giving it a go, getting two brilliant people to play those roles or to kind of spin off the whole idea of a bounty hunter bonding reluctantly with the person he has to take across the country. I'd be fully in favour of, I'd be interested to see a Midnight Run spin-off. Close Encounters of the Third Kind, I want to know what happens to the guy, Richard Dreyfuss, who goes up in the spaceship with all the little aliens. And I think there should be a spin-off of that. I think there should be a TV series. I'm surprised there hasn't been, honestly, of like, because it's such a like, what happens now? What happens, you know, to this guy who's going to end up in this big spaceship with all these aliens and taken to wherever they come from? And you're like, you know, there's so many questions and, you know, things that you want to know about that situation. So
yeah,
I want to see the Close Encounters TV show. And I think they could do, I think I was thinking of the best films recently, Tar, the Kate Blanchett film that she did not win the Oscar for extraordinarily in the end.
Even though she did not.
Yeah, it looked like a sure thing all the way through until the final couple of weeks. I think I'd love to see a Tar TV show, just like her getting into trouble every week in a different way.
Like a procedural.
Yeah, yeah. Tar does weird stuff and gets in trouble week in, week out. That's what I'd like to see. There you go. I'm sure Kate Blanchett would be up for it.
I'm sure she would. I think like books generally, like pick any book adaptation that has gone to a film, and I'd be almost just by default interested to see a TV. So Hunger Games, for example, like what would the Hunger Games series look like? I think that would be an interesting one. Even The Godfather, right? And I don't mean like, you know, The Offer, like not that kind of thing, but literally a complete retelling of The Godfather. It's difficult because the film is so iconic and so brilliant. You almost think, well, you'd end up making something inferior almost by default. But again, I'd quite like to spend time in that world and see what they could do with a proper long form story. I'd really like to see that. I really would.
Again, I'm sure there was talk of it at one point, but I don't know what happened. Yeah,
there might well have been. Yes,
there might. Yeah, and I think Francis Ford Coppola, he did a kind of made for TV re-edit, didn't he? Of it. I mean,
the less said about that, the better. But
yeah. I know.
Yes.
I know.
Yes, yeah. That is very true. I choose not to recognise that exists.
Fair enough. Yeah, fair, I'm with you. Yeah. Yeah.
So I was a bit, I was quiet then because I was just hastily Googling. And I can't, it's a talk around is what I'm saying. Okay, first of all, right.
Go for it.
Honestly, there aren't any films that I would like to make into a series. It is the short answer, but in the spirit of Willing, A Room with a View. I'd like that as a period drama series. I'd think that would be good. And I can imagine watching that on a Sunday night. And then this answer is a bit left field because it's not a film. It's a book, but I'd like to see Richard Osman's Thursday Murder Club made into a TV series as well.
I've heard good things about that. Yeah, it almost certainly has been optioned, right?
Yeah, undoubtedly. But I just think that would be great as well. So they're two shows that I'd like to see.
Yeah, no, I think good chance. But like, you know how like we're going to get the second season of Jack Reacher before too long. Love or Jack Reacher? Is it called Jack Reacher or Critical Reacher? I can't even remember. Either way, I really like that. And again, that was one of those things where. I thought that was so much, you know, I enjoyed that a lot more than I enjoyed the films. And even though the first Jack Reacher film is great, like it's nothing wrong with that at all. The second one I don't like as much, but it works so much better in a serious format again, because you give the story room to breathe. You know, I keep banging this drum endlessly, but I do stand by that. I think they work so much better when you don't have to sort of like carve off bits of the narrative. I mean, we're going to get onto in Pilot Plus this week, whether or not some books do work as serious or not. But there's a bit of a spoiler for Thursday's show. We'll get onto that a little bit later on as well. But I don't know. That's my whole thing. Pick a book. That's my answer to this question, is pick any book and it's been made into a film and make it into a series. There you go. With the possible exception of Eragon. Anyway, that is kind of a question. Paul, obviously, we all hate you by this point, but if anyone other than Paul, who is now banned, if anyone wants to send in a question, to send them to us. Poor Paul. If you want to send us a question, do send them to us via DM on Twitter or Instagram at PilotTVPod, or to me on Instagram at James C. Dyer. And the famous triage system will see it possibly surface or possibly not. Okay, it is time for this week's guest, and David Diggs, who is arguably the very best thing in the original Hamilton cast, and lest we forget, star of the currently in limbo Snowpiercer series, which may or may not see the light in terms of its final season. However, he is back on our screens at the moment in Apple's Extrapolations, and James White met up with him the other week to talk all about it.
We are delighted to be joined on the Pilot TV podcast today by the one and only David Diggs. David, how are you doing?
I'm doing very well, sir. How are you?
I am very good. Very good. I'm excited to talk to you about Extrapolations, which is a very, I would say, fun show, but also kind of thoughtful and a little worrying, some terrifying in places because of the truth it spreads. I did want to ask you just first off, how is it playing Rabbi Z? Given your family background, how is it playing a rabbi, and is your mom happy?
Yeah, mom's was very amused that we took this turn. It was fun. I really like this guy. You know, I really am a big fan of Rabbi Z. He yeah, you know, we get to meet him at a couple of points in his life, and I think the place he gets to is a really familiar one of like just kind of being in your job and kind of having forgotten why you did it in the first place, you know. So it's just a pretty relatable thing that I think everybody goes through at some point. And then his questions that he happens to answer, because he's a faith leader, the questions he ends up having to ask himself are about these big questions of faith and what it means and what God is and what the responsibility of us is, you know. So it's, yeah, it was a really interesting part. And I just like him. I think he's he's a fun guy.
he is, and he's also fascinating because he's sort of wrestling with different issues at different times. As you said, it takes place, I think there is a time period jump. It's
10 or 11 years, yeah, something.
Yeah, and he's basically wrestling, at certain points he's wrestling with the idea of privilege because his father keeps trying to set him up these opportunities and he's sort of resisting that and saying, I want to make my own way. These people need me. I can't just abandon people. And then at the same time, later on, he's also sort of wrestling with ethics because he's having to try and make a decision to help his synagogue, to help his congregation, to help the people that he's basically representing. But it might mean sort of doing something that's not necessarily completely ethically sound.
Yeah, exactly. And he's also like, even in the more personal sense, like messed up because of unfinished or unresolved discussions with his father and like having a complicated relationship with his father who's dead. And he's helping mentor a young woman who is also like in a complicated relationship with her father. Like there's a lot of real human stuff going on there. Yeah.
Was the idea of sort of climate change and the environment and something that you would think about before you got the part, or did it really make you think about it even more deeply once you sort of got the role and started talking to Scott, the producer, and people like that?
Yeah, both are true. I mean, yeah, it's certainly an issue that I think about and care about and have, you know, it's unavoidable. You live in California and like you're sort of confronted with the fact of climate change every day. Scott and the whole team is so well informed. There's so much research that's gone into this piece also. So you can't help but learn more, become more passionate about it, want to do more, be terrified and frustrated also, but be much more aware, I would say.
There's also one other thing about it. I don't want to spoil it for anybody, but there is a scene towards the end of your episode, the second episode that you're in, where we get to see your musical talents on display. And I was kind of wondering if you got to that part of the script and you went, oh, hang on. Yeah. Okay. Thanks, guys. Yeah. Yeah. So this is where you're getting me to do this. This is, you want me singing, dancing again.
I can't actually remember if it was in the script when they first sent it to me, you know, so it might've actually come about a little bit later, but you know, and normally I do avoid things like that actually, but I thought it was so well placed in this episode. I thought like, yeah, this moment of sort of joy that gets interrupted by, you know, without giving too much away, like, you know, that like comes crashing back into reality was actually a really good idea. I just think the writing on this show is so good. And so even that, when it got added to it, I was like, yeah, that's justified. It's cool. There's also like, yeah, I hope it looks good. There are some truly disastrous takes of that. Maybe I'll release one of them at some point. Like some very, like, there is a solid blooper reel of shooting that moment that where I am the least graceful human you have ever seen. In your life. Turns out dancing on water is not, I'm not good at it.
Obviously, it takes a very sort of factual approach to, you know, the future of ecological change, the future of, frankly, ecological disaster. But also, you know, there's going to be a sci-fi element to it because it imagines how the future might look under those circumstances, how fashions look, how technology looks, everything like that. Right. I know you're something of a sci-fi fan yourself. So was that also exciting to you, even after you've done something like Snowpiercer, to sort of embrace this sci-fi future?
Yeah, of course. Yeah, you're right. I'm like a genre guy in general. But yeah, I love science fiction. And this one being as particularly informed as it is. And so making these kind of logical jumps, these extrapolations from like, from real practical science, that like the most current climate science we have, was really exciting. I think, yeah, added to the sort of terror of it. Again, it's all very well done. It all, I think, feels like the best of science fiction does, these very personal stories where we just get to see people living, and it's the stakes of the world that make it exciting or that make it scary or that make it feel disastrous to us. But like, these are personal dramas, you know. It's the kind of stuff we love to watch.
I did want to ask you, you're someone who has created an awful lot of things. You've created music and you're a writer creator on Blindspotting, you know, based on the movie. Does being sort of a writer creator on a TV show give you a different perspective than just acting in someone else's TV show? Does that change how you see the roles or how you see the sort of creative life on that show?
Oh, man. Yeah, that's a good question. I mean, I think it makes me a lot more empathetic towards editors. and writers, honestly. It's just such a TV in particular, like film too, but TV is really, really hard. It is so many moving pieces. It takes so many people. And so being on the like producing end of it is just, I was always kind of aware of this, but I don't, it takes so many people to make something that even gets close to being good. It's a miracle we like anything that's ever been on television to me because it's so hard to do. And being an actor is a relatively small part of that that gets a ton of attention. But like it is actually so much other stuff needs to happen for your performance to be even worth watching, you know? So it's made me even more just aware of that and much more concerned about when I'm on sets about like how everybody's day is going, you know, it's like really easy to get bogged down in like your own personal frustrations that again, like amount to a really very small part of this bigger picture. So like, I try to, when I'm on sets these days, be much more concerned, like, are we having a good time? Can we tell some jokes? Like what's the like vibe for me? Cause they're all going to make the thing. Like I'm basically there to say some words. it's fine.
Do you have plans to do more in the realm of TV to sort of create different shows, to do different stuff? Is that still in the works for you?
Yeah. We're taking some new stuff out soon. And there's some exciting stuff that I'm getting to be more behind the scenes on and in a creative capacity on that I'm very excited about. It is like kind of the newer thing in my arsenal. And it's interesting. It's a very steep learning curve, but
I bet I'm excited. I absolutely bet. And often you've done a lot of projects where it's you working with friends and colleagues who you've worked for a while, or you've known for a while before working together. When you're working on something more like Extrapolations, does that then also change slightly how it works? Is it feel like you've got to make friends on set? Like you're saying, making sure everybody has a good time on set. Is it more sort of making friends on set, meeting new collaborators, that sort of deal?
Yeah, a little bit. It turns out like the bigger part of the research I seem to do when I'm looking to work on a project, when I get sent something, is like ask around and be like, hey, what kind of person is this? Do you like if I know anybody who's worked with them before, like how was it? Was it cool? Was it fun? You know, there are a lot of talented people, but they're like are not it. That is, it's a whole different thing to spend that kind of time around people and to do that kind of intense work around people. So like, trying to figure out to the best of my ability, like, is this someone I'm going to want to hang out with, you know? So I love meeting new people. And yeah, Scott obviously is just like a great person. Like he's such a great guy. Yeah. After one meeting, it was like, yes, of course I want to do this. And then like, you start to see the cast that's coming together and like, I got to spend days with Leslie Uggams. What are you talking about? Like, that's amazing. She's such a good person. Peter Rieger, like these guys, these people who I admire and look up to, who are also just really genuinely great people. So that, you know, those are the parts of it for us is just the experience, right? I have a hard time watching myself. This is questionable. I watch this because I think it's very cool, but like, it's always questionable whether or not I'll even see the thing I did. But so all I have is the experience making it. So I try to protect that.
Do you have trouble watching yourself on screen? Do you sit there and go, oh, I could have done that differently. Oh, I should have done this. I could have done that in some other way.
It's not even, I don't even have ideas for what I should have done. It's just like, I'm never sure why anybody put me in the thing. Like, oh, what a mess. Like, yeah. You
know. Talking of your other show about the dystopian future where the environment has been completely wrecked, which seems to be a thing at the moment with you, is Snowpiercer obviously is coming to an end this year. Do you have that traditional sort of actorly mixed feelings about it? In one way, you would have missed working with the people, but at the same time, I know it was a big commitment and it was, you know, months away from home, everything like that. Is it sort of that? Are you in that stage right now thinking it's over, but you know?
Yeah, that's definitely it. I'm very happy to sort of have that time to try other things. You know, I was essentially acting in one part a year or two if I was lucky. And like now I get to, I'm a little more free to move around, try a bunch of things. I'm trying to take advantage of that. But yeah, the people, that cast was actually exceptionally close. I don't know like how many people know that, but we are, so I see them all the time. I saw Mickey this morning for breakfast. Like I said, you know, like we really do keep in contact. I was at Roberto, just got married not long ago. Like almost all of us went to his wedding. Like it's a very close knit cast. That's the best thing that came out of that experience for me.
Well, my final question would be, I know in at least one previous interview you have sort of manifested an idea of stuff. You were saying like, oh, put me in a big superhero blockbuster, I want to fight some monster who's basically on green screen. And since that interview, I know you voiced Cyborg in Super Pets, and you've you're also part of the voice cast of Moon Girl and Devil Dinosaur. So is there anything you want to manifest going forward from this interview that you'd like to be doing next that maybe the universe can answer for you?
Dang, that's really good. But I should have had that prepped. Yeah, I don't know. I'm trying to live this life, like you said, where I'm getting to play a bunch of different parts, and I want to do like, exist in a bunch of different kinds of film work. That's sort of the area I've done the least in too. So I'm trying to, just do a bunch of different weird stuff and keep learning and keep being pushed and made uncomfortable.
So final question related to that, half of Team Hamilton has basically gone into the MCU. Tony Ramos is in Ironheart coming up and everything like that. So you haven't dropped any phone calls being like, hey man, could you put a word in? You know, could you drop a word into Feige, get me in there?
Nah, man. They know what they're doing over there. They make great stuff, and they come to so many people that you know. Chinaka Hodge is one of my oldest friends, and she wrote Ironheart, and if they have something for me, if they think I'm right, they'll let me know, and I'll happily do it. I enjoy that the world they're creating a lot. So yeah,
I'll keep our fingers crossed for you, David Diggs. Thank you very much. Appreciate it, man.
Thanks, sir.
Right. It's time for news. It's time for news. Shall we have news? Let's have some news. And I saw, now Kay just pulled a face. Now, if I were to interpret that face, I would interpret that as the face of, oh shit, I forgot about news. I should probably Google TV news immediately face. Does that sum that up nicely?
Oh my God, I'm embarrassed. Yes, that is true. But what happened was early, I always like to look for news at the beginning of the week and then I add to it. So I did, and there was no news that I considered to be newsworthy. And so I thought, right, okay, I'll do it closer to the day. And then I just totally forgot. So when you said that, I was like, oh God. So I am-
In a similar to way that there are no films you consider worthy of being made into TV shows.
Yes, Boyd, exactly like that. I'm going to let Boyd wang on, and then I'm going to look in the back.
Wang on, wang on.
And then I'm going to look in the background. Carry on.
You just take your sweet old time to. I'll wang on a bit just to help you out. Talking of films adapted to TV series, James and Kay.
Yeah.
Blade Runner 2099.
Yes.
Is being firmed up. The series is going to be directed by Game of Thrones Jeremy Podeswa, if that's how you pronounce his name. It's an Amazon Prime Video upcoming limited series. We know that he, by the way, he directed Station 11, as well as various episodes of Game of Thrones. It's executive produced by Silke Louisa of Shining Girls fame, the excellent Shining Girls. Ridley Scott is exec producing as well. And among the writers is Tom Speziale, with a brilliant name, who worked on The Leftovers. So all of the credentials for this show are very good. We just have to wait and see what the Blade Runner TV series is going to be like.
I just think as long as you keep it in a future noir-y vibe and you have that kind of neon-soaked land, I'm going to love it. Kay's going to hate it. It's going to be fabulous. I can't wait.
Yeah. Yeah, and the thing is, it kind of makes sense, doesn't it, for a Blade Runner TV series to happen now, because you've got the technology now for it not to be too expensive to recreate the incredible lush visuals of both films, really, haven't you? So they could do it, and it's not going to be, you know, feasibly do it with a big enough budget that it won't look shit, basically, is my thing, because the look and the feel of Blade Runner is the thing that makes it so absolutely special. A friend of mine went to showed it at the IMAX at the weekend. Last weekend, I think, and was saying it's astonishing to see in IMAX. I really want to see it in IMAX because it is one of my favourite films. I'm excited to see what the TV series is going to be like. Same. And there's another TV series that's getting a film treatment. Do you know about this one, James?
I don't know. It depends what it is.
I know. Well, can you guess?
No, I can't.
Well, I'll give you a clue. No, I won't. I'll just tell you. Gattaca.
Oh, Gattaca. Yes. Andrew Nichol's Gattaca. I love that film.
Yes. See, me too. The excellent Andrew Nichol 1997 science fiction, brainy science fiction film, Gattaca.
That would have been an excellent answer to the hated Paul's question.
It would. But now it's happening. So, yeah. With Ethan Hawke and Uma Thurman starred in. I think it's where Ethan and Uma met, I guess, and formed their fabulous relationship.
I mean, fabulous might be a stretch given how it ended, but carry on.
But they're all right, but they're produced a fantastically talented actress.
That's
daughter,
true.
At least.
Yes.
Thank you. That is happening. So this is going to be from the people who made Homeland. It's going to be on Showtime. It's going to be a Showtime series. And yeah, I mean, that makes sense. After all, what we were talking about, what films you'd like to see made as TV series, I think that meets the requirements for quite an interesting TV show, because that had quite complicated, I seem to remember, kind of mythology going on, didn't it? How that whole world worked in that period.
It was all set. Eugenics, essentially the whole thing. And they called them, was it like the love child? If you were born without genetic tampering, you were seen as a freak, essentially, as exactly. Ethan Hawke's character is. Yeah.
Yeah,
it's it's very, very good. Set in the future, Kay, you'd hate it. But it's really, really good. Really good film.
Yeah. I have found some news.
Oh, well.
Go on, hit me with
it. Right. Although now, because I was concentrating on this, I don't know if Boyd's just said it. So,
so what are you going to say? So apparently Kay's going to say, well, Gattaca is going to be in a TV show. It's extraordinary.
Erin Doherty, who played Princess Anne in The Crown, has apparently joined 1,000 Blows on Disney Plus. Have you just talked about this?
No.
Good.
See, you totally could have persuaded her that you had Boydie if you tried.
Yeah. I know. Well, anyway, this 12-part series apparently is set in the perilous world of illegal boxing in 1880s Victorian London. And was this the reason why I thought you'd mentioned it, because I heard you talking about Stephen Knight earlier.
Oh, it's a Stephen Knight
book. Yes, yeah. And was created and written by Stephen Knight and exec produced by the legend that is Stephen Graham, who also stars. So I'm excited about that.
I got a press release about this today. It's exciting. Well, anything with Stephen Graham in is worth watching, and anything written by Stephen Knight is worth watching. So this is doubly worth watching.
The dream team.
Yeah, absolutely that. Speaking of which, you know the Russo brothers' Citadel has been renewed for season two before it's even been aired. It is the anti-Willow, if you will.
Is that the one that's Priyanka Chopra?
Yeah.
Yes, it is indeed. Yeah, but I'm excited about that. I think Citadel looks quite quite bold and audacious and lavish and all of these other adjectives
looks,
that we enjoy so much.
It looks very you, yeah.
It does look very me. Well, not Globalist. You in a capital Y-O-U. Hello,
no,
you.
No glass boxes involved.
No. No Perspex cases to keep people in. No. To the best of our knowledge, we've not seen it yet. Maybe it does. I'd say. Speaking of a glass case of emotion, best friends Matthew McConaughey and Woody Harrelson are going to be back together again, not for another season of True Detective, but for a new Apple show where they'll be playing themselves.
Yes, I like this idea. Yeah. Built up based on their actual relationship, friendship, because they are best friends IRL. And I love both of them. Woody Harrelson's gone a bit conspiracy theorist recently, hasn't he, I think, in the real world. I think he's gone down that route slightly, as well as being a massive pothead, which is, you know.
It's a winning combo, some would say.
It's possibly a winning combo. But, that'll be very watchable, I'm sure. Yeah, it's also created by the guy who, David West Reed, who created the Big Door Prize, which we may or may not be reviewing next week.
And also who helped write Schitt's Creek, I believe. He worked on it.
He did. He did. He was a Schitt's Creeker. Yeah.
Mm.
Correct.
Have you heard that Netflix might be doing a US remake of Squid Game? Not the reality Squid Game, where everyone got cold in a hangar in the north of England, but actual Squid Game, like obviously in English language, American Hollywoodized Squid Game.
What a waste of time.
It does seem somewhat unnecessary, but...
I mean, it was a massive hit anyway, like globally. It was.
I guess they want to make it more of a hit by having it in English.
Just spend money on new stuff, please.
Yeah. I mean, Kay, as our foreign language correspondent, frankly, you've been quite lax as our foreign language correspondent. Since anointing yourself the foreign language correspondent, you have gone to bat for precisely zero foreign language shows.
No, I explained that on the last pod. And
have you considered becoming an MP?
Fuck you, James. I cannot be more clear. Fuck off. No. I explained it on the last pod, and that lovely person got in touch and said, thanks for like keeping me up to date. And I'm sorry, I was watching like 22 other show episodes this week, so I haven't been able to, but it is at the forefront of my mind, I promise. Yeah.
Good. Good, good, good. I am pleased.
He is unbearable today, Boyd.
I am. I'm on a roll today. Yeah. Sweet Tooth is getting we knew Sweet Tooth was getting a second season, but there have been some set pictures from Sweet Tooth. But all that really does is underscore the fact that Sweet Tooth has a second season, showing that Netflix really are just so wildly inconsistent about what they do and don't renew. I don't fully understand it. But here we are. We live in this world.
What? Remind me what Sweet Tooth was again?
It's the one with the kid with antlers.
Oh, yeah. Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, my God. That was like...
Right?
Yeah.
Look, I'm not saying it's terrible or anything. I'm just saying Netflix have had better shows that they have killed, as in fact have Disney. And there we are.
Talking of Netflix shows, did you know... I was reading this story about... Do we cover the Jenna Ortega slagging off her own program story? Did I mention this last week?
No, I don't think
you did.
No.
Oh, okay. She's done a couple of interviews about recently. She's in Scream... V1 or 6 or whatever you want to call it. And she talked about, she's in Wednesday, obviously she's the main star of Wednesday, which did you know that Wednesday is the second most watched English language series of all time on Netflix?
Oh, wow.
Really?
Yeah.
Do you know what? My niece loves that and she's trying to convince me to watch it all the time.
Yeah. Well, this will be partly why, because it's got a very broad demographic.
Mm. Yeah, second only to Stranger Things, right? Anyway, she did an interview a couple of weeks ago in which she basically slagged off the writers massively. It was on a podcast. It was on the Armchair Expert podcast. And she said that she opposed a lot of Wednesday's dialogue, changed her lines of set without telling the writers she was going to. Mm. And she said, I don't think I've ever had to put my foot down more on a set in a way I had to on Wednesday. Everything that Wednesday does, everything I had to play, did not make sense for her character at all.
Oh, my God.
And she goes on to, extraordinary. And then she did another interview with The Times since then, in which she slags off the program in a new way, where she talks about she was so reluctant to do it. She basically told Tim Burton where to go, and she said, no, I'm not doing it, because I only want to do films.
Yeah.
And the films are better than TV.
And she specifically says, I've done TV all my life, and all I ever want to do is film. It would prevent me from doing other jobs I really wanted and cared about. So you're like, okay.
Yeah. It's incredible. She is a piece of work.
I feel like we're entering into a possible Drake Ramore situation here, where in Wednesday season 2 she's going to fall down a lift shaft in the first episode. The writers are like, right, see how you like this.
Yeah, and I'm sure there'll be quite a few people who want to push her. That is awful. Mm. Yeah.
Yeah, it's crazy.
How short-sighted,
It's an odd mood, I would say. Mm. Seems a strange
thing. It's not a vibe, James. It's not a vibe.
It's not a vibe. No. Any other news before we move on?
Now, this is not strictly TV news, but it is reviews news.
Right.
Because now, last week, I did a shout out saying, please, can we get some more reviews of the podcast? Because I wanted to get 9 more to then force James to buy cake, which, I mean, to be fair, anyone just listening this week would probably think we deserve cake. The onslaught of abuse we've had from James this week. But anyway, well, we've exceeded our goal and we are now on 1,111 ratings. And can I just give a little shout out to my favourite review that has come in?
Oh, God.
No, it's brilliant. It's brilliantly short. It was from someone called 30.
Is it from Paul? Is it from the hated Paul?
Paul, please, if you are going to rate us, don't let James's performance today like put you off. Give us a full 5 stars, please. It's from someone called 13 Slim. And they've given us 5 stars, so thank you. And they've just said, let there be cake. That is their review. That is the whole review. I'm here for that person. Thank you very much, 13 Slim. I salute you. Let there be cake.
Very good. Yeah. Let there be cake.
So, thank you to everyone who left a review and anyone else. Listen, we're still taking reviews. I'm going to obviously figure out more incentives for to get James to buy us more stuff.
I've got to make good on the cake first.
Yeah, and I've done some research into that of your nearest...
What, into what cake I should get you?
No, into the nearest Pat Val, Patisserie Valerie.
Is that where I've got to go? This sounds expensive.
Yeah, you've got 4 characters.
I was thinking M&S, you know, Colin the Caterpillar, something kind of basic.
I'll send you some links. Okay.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Great, thanks.
So thanks for vote. Thanks for rating us so we can get cake.
Yes, thank you all for the reviews about cake. Let's move on to this week's reviews. And first up this week, we have Great Expectations, a little story you might have heard about. Specifically, Stephen Knight's interpretation of the Charles Dickens classic, which sees Fionn Whitehead as Pip, Olivia Colman as Miss Havisham, and, inexplicably, Matt Berry as Mr. Pumblechuck.
Who is he's fantastic, by the way.
He is fantastic, but I did do a double take. I was like, is it?
Yeah.
I can hear you, Miss Havisham.
Very good.
Oh, Boydie, what the dickens did you think of this?
Well, first of all, in my Q&A with Stephen Knight and Olivia Colman and the rest of the cast, except not Matt Berry. Matt Berry was not there, sadly, last week. At the BFI, Stephen Knight did say that he loved Matt Berry's performance as Mr. Bumblechuck so much that he was thinking of doing a spin-off series just about him.
He should.
Bumblechuck.
Yeah, Bumblechuck. And he is fantastic in that role. What's interesting about this is that it's only a matter of years ago that our favourite screenwriter, Sarah Phelps, aka Phelpsy, wrote her version of this show.
She did.
Which had Gillian Anderson in the Miss Havisham role and various other people in
Douglas
the cast,
Booth.
So I can't remember. Douglas Booth, that's right, as Pip. And that was a brilliant version. I remember watching it. I remember loving it. So, and it's what's interesting is like she's famous for bringing in the dark, you know, the black comedy and the darkness and the perversity of all the things she adapts, particularly famously all of her Agatha Christie's. And yet so is Stephen Knight in a way. You know, I think, you know, one of the best things about Peaky Blinders, the show he's most famous for, is how, you know, it wasn't just ostensibly the story of gangsters, you know, in Birmingham in a particular period, but there was so much more going on than that. And there was a lot of kind of dark, weird sexual stuff going on. You know, there was kind of proper like emotional weirdness and freakery in that show, and he brings that a lot of that to his version of Great Expectations, which is, we should say, a very adult. I mean, there's been versions of Great Expectations that went out at like 4:30, 5 o'clock on a Sunday evening on BBC One at one point, you know.
Yeah.
It was like, you know, this is not family viewing, very much so. And while the first episode kind of sticks pretty closely to the very famous storyline, Pip, he's an orphan, he's living with his really horrible sister, played by
Hayley
Squires.
She's really horrible.
She is a monster in this, you know. I mean, she is in the book, but she really is in this version. And her rather lovely husband, who's a blacksmith, and Stephen Knight's actual dad was a blacksmith, by the way, which is partly why he felt a personal connection to the story. And Pip goes off to see his dead parents, to see their graves, at which point he gets accosted by Magwitch, who's a kind of ex-con who's escaped from his prison ship. And that forms that's the big opening action scene that always gets, you know, dramatized, and it's done very, very well in this version. But it's really, and then Bumblechuck comes along with the offer to Pip to make money.
Wait, he's Pumblechuck, isn't he? I think someone slipped into calling him Bumblechuck.
Yeah, there's different spellings. To be honest, there are different spellings of his name. I noticed on Wikipedia, it's Bumblechuck, but it is Pumblechuck. Pumblechuck.
Yeah,
you're right.
So it's spelled. Have I been calling him Bumblechuck?
Yeah, at one point you did, but I enjoyed it, so I didn't.
But
correct.
It is Pumblechuck is obviously the canonical pronunciation. Mm.
Correct. Anyway, he comes along with this offer for Pip to the family that Pip will be paid to go and hang out with this weird, creepy Miss Havisham in her massive, huge mansion, along with her adopted daughter Estella, and this is a weird proposition in itself, and forms the crux of the story. Really, that Pip, who wants to kind of advance himself and go beyond, you know, his working class, very working class family, and make a gentleman of himself, and so he gets this kind of education really through these two weird people. And you have to say that the casting of Olivia Colman as Miss Havisham is genius, because Olivia Colman just brings out that really kind of that weirdness, that kind of festering anger. She's a woman who's been left at the lurch at the altar. That's why she is who she is. And she kind of takes out, she sees kind of bringing in Pip and watching him play games with his daughter as a kind of revenge on mankind, on male kind, on men. But she kind of gives such depth to that role, and she kind of has such a great time with it that it's fantastic to watch. She really brings out this kind of like, this almost like enjoying herself as she watches these people and the games they're playing. So she's fantastic. I think the rest of the cast is great. Finn Whitehead as Pip. Pip is kind of, is slightly a bit of a blank, at least when he goes through this incredible journey. Like, he starts out as a working class kid, and he kind of becomes a gentleman, and he becomes an amoral figure, I think, very interestingly. Ashley Thomas, better known as the rapper Bashy, plays Mr. Jaggers, who's the incredibly evil, wicked lawyer, again, who Stephen Knight gives much depth to. I've seen the whole series, by the way. I watched all six episodes. Okay. So I could bang on about it all day. It's really, really good. I think Stephen Knight just has such a brilliant take on this story and brings so many new things to it. And in answer to your point, James, that you said right at the beginning of the podcast, I said we'll get to it.
Yeah.
The way Stephen Knight famously works is to write stuff just as it occurs to him. He does not plan in advance. He does not plot things out. He
hasn't much got like me in this podcast, but yes.
Yeah, exactly. He does not have loads of post-it notes with the whole structure of his stories. And he kind of did as much as he could with this. Obviously, he's in the sense that his writer, he's very, you know, he's monitoring the book, looking at the book, reading the book, adapting the book, but it goes off in different directions. And he does change quite a lot of things about it.
Does it? There's much That's
more,
interesting.
Yeah. So there's much more of Jaggers, for example, in this TV show than there is in the book. There's actually a lot more Miss Havisham as well, really.
Oh, that's good.
In this. Yeah, which is absolutely the right decision.
I mean, if you're having Olivia Colman as Miss Havisham, you better hope so. So
exactly. But at the point at which, and this was my first question in the Q&A that I had with him the other day, the point at which I thought we're in Stephen Knight land rather than Dickens land is when in episode two, you get to see Matt Berry's Pumblechook being beaten on his bare ass by Hayley Squires.
Oh my God. That is so he really moment. Was Bumblechook.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah.
Oh my God.
And it all kicks off.
For what reason?
Well, I cannot, who knows? Who knows? It's a very good question. That's what we were asking in the Q&A. I mean, what the fuck?
Yeah, a perversion. Okay.
But it's all about, well, I mean, she is horrible. And
she's awful. I really liked it. I mean, I'm a sucker for a period drama and Dickens. And so I was always going to like this. But I just thought, well, I agree with everything you said. And I just thought that Stephen Knight's done a good job of sort of amplifying. I mean, Dickens is, you know, obviously his books are quite dark and grimy and gritty and atmospheric anyway. But he's done a good job of amplifying that and just sort of, you know, this is I think I said in my review, it's like a critique of England's class system, right? And that is, really comes across in the whole, through the whole story. For me, the highlights were Matt Berry. I mean, he was fantastic as Pumblechook. And I'm glad, will he get more, does he get bigger throughout?
He's pretty. Yeah, he comes in and out. I wouldn't say it's like a huge role, but he recurs quite a lot. Yeah, yeah. Mm.
And also Olivia Colman as Miss Havisham. She's just. I mean, I can't. I watched the Sarah Phelps's TV adaptation in 2011, but I can't remember Gillian Anderson's performance particularly in that. I can't remember if she was as sort of sick and twisted as Olivia Colman's playing it, because she really plays it in such a. I mean, she says something about. Oh, she talks about Pip carrying out her sick fantasies of what she wants. And you just feel it's genuinely unnerving and creepy and like, oh gosh, she's awful, but brilliant. So I just thought casting Olivia Colman was a stroke of genius. Because actually, who else can follow Gillian Anderson? We've also had Helena Bonham Carter in that role. You know, it's probably the natural progression to have Olivia Colman in it, but she was great.
You know what? Don't know this story particularly well. I've never read Great Expectations. I didn't study it at school. And thinking about it, I'm not entirely sure whether or not I have watched an adaptation of it. I think I have seen what.
Have you seen the film? David Nichols' film? Like
that's the one I think I've seen. Yes, I think I've seen that. I just remember very little about it. So yes, I think I've seen that. But I don't remember this story. Maybe I should watch them all. Like in success, and this could be my year of Dickens.
Yes,
that's quite a Oscar reference
for you there.
There's quite a few.
Maybe not all of them. I'm sure Doctor Who and or Star Trek have done a version of it at some point. But so I don't know the story very well. So I was a little bit like, I know who Magwitch is. I know who Pierce. It's all a bit vague to me. So I mean, look, I wasn't dreading this at all, but I wasn't exactly looking forward to it. I was a bit okay, great period, whatever Dickens, blah blah blah. But I was just like, ooh. And suddenly, despite myself, I became ever so slightly obsessed. It is so beautifully shot, and the production design is outstanding. And just like the, where everything from like the misty marsh to like the feel of the forge and their little kitchen and then Havisham's house, all of it, the costume design, it's, you know, Boyd, it's lavish up the wazoo. Yeah. It really is. And it's, and but it's just really, really compelling. You know, just the relationship between him and his sister, who is the absolute worst. Also, the kind of jocular, friendly relationship he's got with his sister's husband, who's the blacksmith, who obviously the two of them are very much, you know, in cahoots a little bit, knowing that she's a bit of a martinet. And but then also the real pain that he goes through his face when Pip says, I don't want to be a blacksmith because, you know, I'm super smart and I don't really want to make horseshoes for the rest of my life, which is kind of fair. You know, I got really, really into the character of it. I loved Matt Berry walking in and demanding pie, which was spectacular. All of it really, really got me. And then the dynamic with Magwitch, and I do kind of know where that, at least, arc of the story is going. I remember that bit. But I thought that was really interesting as well. And when you see Magwitch and the other convicts on the ship at the beginning, you know, being shipped off to Australia, it's I think the sense of place, the sense of time and place were really what got me, that I felt this felt 100% like being in this time and being in these places. And these people felt real. They felt like lived in, believable, well-rendered characters. And I think that, to use a wanky word, verisimilitude, really, really gets me. Like, it really gets its hooks in me. So I just wanted to stay with this. So despite having less than great expectations of this, I was very, 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 very excited by it. It's really, really, really good.
This is perfect Sunday night television. I'm just surprised it's not. It feels like a real winter production. It should be on at winter. Do you know what I mean?
Well, because it starts at Christmas.
No, it just feels like something that you'd, you know, cozy winter night in, you can imagine, rather than in spring. I don't just saying
it's not a cozy show though.
No, but the one,
it's not a cozy show.
No, not, of course, but like, I mean, few of Dickens' adaptations are, but
Yeah, he wasn't the Laugh Riot, was he? did you know that burning berries in the house invites Satan in? I didn't know that.
A shout out to, I want to shout out to Shalom Brew Franklin, who plays Estella, the grown-up Estella. There are two kids play them in, mostly in the first episode, who are both great.
Yeah.
But she's fantastic as Estella as well. But another brilliant bit of casting. So, yeah.
Very good. Great Expectations then, which lands on BBC One when, Boydy?
Sunday at 9 o'clock. And it's not going to be a box set, unusually.
It's not going to be a box set, so you will have to watch it. Is it weekly?
Yes.
Week by week.
As Dickens would have intended, a serial.
Exactly. Yeah. As Charles
Chaz
demanded.
Chaz. D.
Chucky D. Yeah. Right. That was Great Expectations. Let's move on to The Dry, which is an Irish comedy created by Nancy Harris, which stars Roisin Gallagher as a woman on the wagon returning to Dublin from her adopted home in London for a nan's funeral. This has, perhaps reductively, been described or dubbed the Irish Fleabag. But Kay, the question, of course, is, does that do it justice? Tell us about The Dry.
So The Dry is, as you said, it's it features Roisin Gallagher, who plays a character called Shiv. And as you said, she's back from London. She's in Dublin for her nan's funeral. And she spent basically years in London partying, and she's now sober and has like these good intentions. She's going to stay sober. She's, you know, this is her new life. But very quickly, she realizes being back in her family home with the family dynamics, and also, you know, for this sad occasion, is very much like tempting to hit the booze again. So it's all about how she navigates this new phase of her life and all the issues her family have. I really like this. I just thought, I really enjoy dark humor, and there's ample, you know, there's bucket loads of that here. You know, just seeing her parents in the first few scenes, just watching the open casket like it's a TV. And all the stress that comes with having a wake in your home, plus the dynamics between the siblings, I found that really interesting and also quite sort of like hard to watch, because they do like go at each other, and it's quite fraught, the tension, particularly between Caroline, her sister, and Shiv, but also the parents. So they keep on hinting at this drama that's occurred when she was full on, you know, boozing. Obviously, bad stuff has happened. We don't quite know what, but something bad has happened, and her behaviour has obviously contributed massively to that, because, you know, they're worried that she's going to relapse. particularly at the wake, can cause a scene. And between them, you know, you see the parents occasionally talking of like, you know, can we can surely put up with her for one weekend, can't we? It's just awful. And I was like, oh God. So yeah, I really like, it's very bittersweet and I really enjoyed it. And I thought, particularly, you know, the sadness of seeing Shiv realizing, slowly dawning upon her, that the one person who sort of accepted her and liked her for her is basically in a coffin. It was really sad, but also made me laugh. Yeah, bittersweet.
I did mention Fleabag in my preview that I wrote for Heat Magazine. Apologies.
Fast-paced boy, that's what they call you.
Yeah, I know. I mentioned Back for Good as well, another show, you know, focusing on a woman and her issues. But this has got a very different... I also said, which is true, this has its own unique tone, different tone as well, and I think it does. So I think it does a really good job of not trying to be too funny. I mean, it's a half-hour show. It's a show that's in half-hour chunks, and you think, oh, this is a sitcom, basically, or a comedy, an out-and-out comedy. But it feels like, you know, without getting to... We've often debate whether or not a show is a drama or a comedy or a comedy drama or whatever. There are funny bits, but they're completely driven by character. Like, there's not even really any gags in it. And I when I say gags, I mean, like, there's no big comedic setups, you know, where there's like a kind of, where there are punchlines to a comedic situation. It's just that every now and then, it's just that these characters are quite funny in their own right, and that they're, the way they're being observed, and, you know, the way that people, I don't know, suddenly decide to cover up for their drinking, or the guy, her ex with the hat, that annoying twat in the hat. The twat in the hat. He is like, I instantly took against him. And then even more, I watched two episodes. In the second episode, he really is a fucking massive jerk. But you're laughing kind of at how pathetic he is rather than anything specifically that he says and does. And I think, so it's kind of, it's quite stealth the way it is funny. And I quite like that about it. And I agree. I think that her relationship with her siblings was really interesting. I thought the gay son was brilliantly played. And again, he gets a really good scene in the second episode with his mum, where they just decide to take her shopping in town, and they go off and have cocktails and stuff. It's quite unpredictable in that way. And it's quite, it's unusual and different. Yeah, it's I thought it was really, really good. And it's you know, ITVX is kind of, this is a show that was made, you know, in Ireland for RTE. I think it was an RTE co-production with BritBox. And now it's been, ITVX has taken it. But I think they're actually, like, doing a good job of showing a lot of stuff that people would have heard about. Because I remember hearing about this show and it got really, really good reviews in Ireland. You know, it's hailed as a really great show. And it is really, really good. It's pretty excellent, I think.
Well,
come on, James.
Hold on to your hat, ITV.
Don't piss on Upgrade. Come on.
No, it's fabulous, isn't it? Oh, like, I loved it. But this is exactly my kind of comedy, where exactly as you said, there are no kind of ridiculously, you know, straining credulity setups or gags or corny like budum dum ch kind of humour. It's just character driven, funny,
James,
people.
What noise was that?
In situations. That was a budum bum. No,
I just wanted him to do it again.
No, okay, fair enough. But I properly was tittering to myself in this. It really made me laugh. I couldn't even tell you what made me laugh or what the gags were. But I did, okay, so at the beginning, so Roisin Gallagher, who is spectacular as Shiv, we start with her at the airport where she hasn't been picked up. And she's having a conversation with some random guy drinking a Guinness on his own. And suffice to say, the conversation it goes in an unexpected direction. It involves Jesus. And it ends with, shall we say, an exclamation of hers, which actually properly made me piss myself laughing. I thought it was just fucking fabulous. Not just the way she delivered it, but then the way the scene is blocked and the way everyone reacts to it was just magnificent. And I was just like, I just pegged this as I'm going to watch every episode of this because it's really funny and I really enjoyed it. And I love that kind of, I suppose this is more the Fleabaggy thing. It's not that it's got a female protagonist and she's a bit of a, as Terry would absolutely not have described, a hot mess. It's the fact that it has that real tragicomic vein running through it. So it's a little bit sad. It's a little bittersweet, if you will. It works through it. It's really funny. It's tragic. It's all this. There's lots of pathos in it. It's just a lovely little human story that's really entertaining, really funny, and crucially also short. So it feels like it never outstays its welcome. I thought The Dry was, maybe doesn't have the best title of any show I've ever seen, but it's great. It's really great. Hooray. Hooray for The Dry.
I just heard this.
Super dry. That would have been a really good intro to this review. Can't believe I didn't think of that.
I heard the noise of like several ITV bods just fainting on the spot that you liked one of their things. one of those shows.
I think they called off the hit on my life and I can come out of hiding.
No, that's still very much there.
So it's not, oh, okay. It's not really an ITV show though, to be fair.
Yeah, yeah. That's it. So it's the ITV fatwa remains in place. okay, right. The Dry then, which comes to the ITVX on the, I want to say Thursday, the 23rd.
Always Thursday for ITVX. Yeah.
Yes, the Thursday, the 23rd of the March. Excellent. Finally this week, we have The Return of Yellow Jackets, last year's mystery show about a girls' football team that crash lands in the wilderness back in the 90s with a parallel story about how the girls who survived as adults, having moved on from their whole feral Lord of the Flies-esque cannibal phase. It also features an embarrassment of 90s bangers on the soundtrack, which I'm very pleased to report continues into this second season as well. Kay is officially the expert on Yellow Jackets, having watched everything Yellow Jackets over the past week. So I'm going to ask you, Kay, is this better or worse than Chumbawamba's Tub Thumping?
It is as good. Do you know what? I've got to... I'm a bit worried about talking about this. I might have to hand over the baton to Boyd because, well... Two things. First of all, as you know, I've watched 11 episodes back to back. And so now I've fallen into I'm confused as to what was in the finale and what's in the first episode. But more crucially, we got this sort of spoiler list letter that comes through when you get a screener. And to me, it feels like everything's on there that, like, that we can't talk about. So all I will say is it continues to be great storytelling. So at the end, I'm just going to do a talk around. Basically, the end of the finale, we knew certain things, right? So we knew in the past that Jackie was dead. Can we say that? I mean, I've said it.
I think we can say that. I'm saying if you haven't seen season one of Yellow Jackets, you'd probably skip this.
Okay, fine. So Jackie's dead. We know that Javi's missing. And then in the present, we're dealing with all the facts that, you know, like Misty has drugged the reporter and Lottie has cleared Travis's bank account, who is Travis, RIP, and Natalie's been kidnapped, and Thaisa, well, she butchered her dog. So, you know, very much now, we're just following on from those storylines, and all I can say for fear of being shot by the bigwigs is that Ty has got a new dog, hashtag pray for Steve, okay, and Misty is still...
Steve is the name of the dog, by the way.
Yeah.
Understand.
Oh. Justice for Steve the dog.
You should pray for Steve. Steve could be a character that you're praying for. I'm just explaining.
Okay. Sorry. You know. Pray for Ty's dog, new dog called Steve. And yeah, Misty is still completely bonkers and mad.
I love Misty.
She's my... I think she might... God, I'm torn between Shauna and Misty, but Misty, for me, gets the best lines. And because obviously I've binged it. The scene where she tries to stop Natalie from taking cocaine remains one of my absolute highlights. Those two scenes were just brilliant. Yeah. So all I'm saying is, I'm just going to say it's really, really good, but I don't know what else to say that we can get away with saying.
I'm glad I forced you to watch it.
Oh,
excellent.
Yes. No, I've actually said to other people that I was like so happy that you guys forced me, James particularly, he was banging on, you'll like this. And I thought, is he trying to dupe me? Like he does.
Is it set in space?
But I'm so happy that you twisted my arm to watch it, because even though it's not my kind of show at all, this is an example of the pod doing good. It convinced me to watch a show that I wouldn't have ordinarily, and I really enjoyed it. I could not stop watching it.
And how often do you get to hear Tori Amos's Cornflake Girl in a show? I'm saying not often enough. I will say the title sequence still upsets me, though.
Right. I'm completely run round by the title sequence. That's my big news, because I agree with you. I didn't like the title sequence last when we watched the first series. I thought it was, but it's got this...
It's
like,
discordant.
It's
and
very
quite,
low. It's discordant. It's that song, that music, that song, if you call it a song, is by Craig Wedren and Anna Waronka, who do a lot of the soundtrack. And so it's specifically created by them for the show. It's called No Return. But I think it really works now. I've completely changed my mind. I've done a complete 180. Because it really fits the kind of messy, kind of slightly grubby quality of the things that go on in the show. And it has got a very... like 80s feel to it, to 80s, 90s feel to the music. So I kind of really like it now, and the kind of lo-fi quality.
I can't even remember it.
Yeah. It's kind of like a fuzzy TV. It's like fuzzy TV action. You're watching clips from their lives play out over a very discordant music.
Oh, I like that.
Music.
Yeah, I've always liked it.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah. But the Tori Amos song as well, I particularly, was that leading into the end titles, wasn't it? Yeah, I think in episode one.
I can't remember, but I remember being in there and thinking, "Oh, it's Conflict
Girl."
The
music choices are brilliant, but we should say, I don't know if we even explained the premise. Maybe I missed it, but it is about this group of high school girls who end up in the wilderness, in the Canadian wilderness, after their plane crashes, and it cuts between the teenagers as they're trying to survive in that wilderness.
It is in many ways the template for Race Across Canada, the popular reality TV show that we discussed last week.
Exactly. I don't know if they're going to end up doing what they have to do in this show, but yeah, that
fingers crossed not.
If Race Across the World takes a really dark turn, it could end up. But that cross-cutting between 1996 and the present day is obviously carries on in series two. The interesting thing for me, this show, I mean, I love it. It's brilliant. It is you have to really pay attention. I think it's interesting that Kay's binged on it, you know, not kind of watched it 11 episodes in a week or whatever it is. So they're all fresh in your mind. The first series I watched, I didn't binge on it. I was watching it week by week. And you really have to kind of remember all, there are so many characters and they're in the past and present and their various associates. It got quite complicated for me and I had to really focus. And funnily enough, I thought the recap, there's a long recap at the start of this new season. I thought, oh my God, even the recaps are really confusing and complicated because it has to be because it is quite a complicated setup for the show. But having said that, it's just fantastic. And the cast, I mean, Melanie Lynskey, fresh from her role in The Last of Us, her cameo role in Last of Us, really, is just so brilliant. And you kind of like, she's done some terrible things, but you kind of excuse them because she's such a brilliant actress. And her relationship with her teenage daughter is brilliantly believable as well. Then you've got, as you mentioned, you've got, you know, Christina Ricci having a brilliant time. Juliette Lewis. I love Juliette Lewis. I mean, she kicks serious butt in this show and has
she's
to
so
in
good.
Episode one. She's so good.
Yeah.
And all the teen cast are brilliant as well. I mean, they're just all absolutely to a T. Down every single one of them is completely believable in the show. And even though it's got elements of like Lost, it's got a lot of elements of other shows, you know, I mean, the plane crash and all of that. It's so that structure of it, the flashing back between these two timelines and the way that it's played out in the current timeline is full of really freaky stuff. The stuff that's in the basement with all that stuff that Steve the dog gets to see in the first episode and the thing I'm trying to avoid spoilers. What?
Can we just say, like, what Steve the dog has to witness in that first episode is barbaric. It's horrendous.
Exactly.
Justice is Steve.
We do need we need Steve to be taken away from Ty because,
Yeah, indeed, yeah. But they've all got really weird, freaky stuff that's happened to all of them, basically, in the present day to a demented level. There's like a really full-on sex scene in the first episode of present day stuff. Do you remember what I'm referring to? Which is like, oh my, okay, just to add to the perversity of the situation, we're going to give you this. It's full on. I love it. It's mad. But it is, but that's what, so even though it's got lots of bits and pieces of other shows, it's completely unique in its own right.
See, this to me is peak TV.
Yeah.
Oh, not, yeah. Oh, 100%.
Rather than,
But this is the peak TV version of Lost, isn't it? Really, like that's what this feels like. It's like it's that kind of it's a mystery box show, but with more of an undercurrent of horror to it. But it's fascinating. It's edgy. It's really great. It's kind of unshackled by the kind of I guess restrictions of what Lost went through on whatever network it was on at the time.
But ABC.
It was ABC. Yes, indeed. I love this so much. I think it's great. I think the casting, as you said, is on point. I have no idea where it's going because it is completely bonkers. Mm. And it's shocking as well. And some of the places it goes to are really fucking bleak.
Yeah.
And I really want to know what happens with the show. There's a reason why this became one of the most talked about shows of last year. Like it was a phenomenon and with good reason.
There's such depth to the characters though. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. It's like you get to explore why the fuck they are all like this. And what I think is really interesting, and I think the thing that hooked me is the dual timeline to see how that trauma plays out in the now, you know?
Yeah.
I think that's really interesting.
And it's the fill in the blanks thing, isn't it? It's like, because again, it has that timey-wimey-ness that Lost had, but it just does it in a very pointed way, where the thing about this is it's very easy to have one timeline that's interesting and one that very much isn't. And what they manage to do with this is they make them both equally compelling and both full of mystery as well. Yeah. So you don't know where you're going to go in either timeline. And again, part of it is the casting, because the young cast is really good, but the adult cast is an absolute knockout, which helps, because the sort of the modern day stuff is slightly more grounded, which helps keep that really compelling. It's just, I mean, it's just a great show. Watch it, really, is ultimately what this comes down to. Is if you're not watching Yellow Jackets, what the fuck are you doing? The only thing that's going to throw people is Yellow Jackets season one, of course, aired on Sky. Yellow Jackets season two now is on Paramount Plus. So a few people had written in to say, oh my God, what is this? Why is it not on Sky? I don't have Paramount Plus. Sorry, that's just one of those things.
Can they do one of those things? Just do a trial and lap
it
up and then cancel?
Sky, I think if you've got Sky Q, you do get Paramount Plus, I'm pretty sure, for free.
Do you get the whole of Paramount Plus? I know you can get Paramount Plus through Sky Q. I don't know if you get it unless you pay for it. I think it's like a bolt-on extra. I don't think it's like a base package thing.
If not, Boyd's going to pay for each person who doesn't have it.
That's right.
I'm
buying you cake, but Boyd's paying for everyone's Paramount Plus.
Oh my God, Jesus Christ. I'm pretty sure you get it.
This exclusively for Pilot Plus subscribers.
Yeah. As well as getting the postal Boyd in his velour robe, he'll also pay for your Paramount Plus. What could be fairer than that?
That's a Pilot Plus guarantee. Fabulous. Yellow Jackets then, which comes to the Paramount Plus now on Friday the 24th of March. And also, I think we're going to try and do week by week Yellow Jackets spoiler chats on Pilot Plus. I say try to, because obviously who the hell knows what we're going to do on Pilot Plus. But certainly that is the goal. Not this Thursday's one, because that's too soon. And also it's like the day it airs. But we'll go with maybe the week after we'll start. The only thing is, I've been given, and as I'm sure you guys have, been given quite a few episodes in advance. So I'm not sure I'm going to be able to restrain myself, but we'll see. We'll see.
Yeah.
Also out this week is Netflix's The Night Agent, adapted by The Shield's Sean Ryan from the Matthew Quirk novel of the same name. This stars an FBI agent whose greatest opponent is, in fact, a Netflix embargo. So we'll be discussing this one on Pilot Plus this Thursday to see if he overcomes said embargo. What else is out this week, Boydy? What have you missed? What did we not cover?
Oh, that's a good question. The new series of Grace, this is the, I mentioned that last week, I think, the Brighton set crime series. That's back on Sunday.
I think you did, yes.
At 8 o'clock on ITV, okay. The Cleaner, the Greg Davis comedy, that is on if people who like comedies and Greg Davis. It's like an anthology show. He plays a crime cleaner-upper, and that's on Friday on BBC One. There's a thing called Drift Partners in Crime on Sky Atlantic, which I think is a German kind of cop duo show, Kay, that you should have got us to do because it's subtitled.
Yeah, Kay, you should have been going to bat for that. Drift Partners in Crime, foreign language show. Shocking. Exactly. Shocking dereliction of duty.
Oh God. Yeah. No, I'm gonna get on the foreign dramas, don't you worry.
Good. That's a promise.
I think the season 9 of The Flash, believe it or not.
Jesus Christ.
Yes, indeed. Jesus Christ. Good response. That is on Sky Max on Tuesday, 8 o'clock. Power Book 2, Ghost 3, Season 3. That show on Lionsgate
Hard
is back
pass.
On Friday. Yeah, indeed.
Because we reviewed Power Book something.
We did, like,
which came from the middle of the Power story, and I didn't know what was going on.
I know. Yeah. I think, there's a Waco American Apocalypse, I think, documentary series on Netflix. Arriving on Wednesday.
Good to
I think
know.
That's a documentary. Yeah. Yeah, good to know. I don't know. I'm just random now. Randomly going now. Yeah, that'll do.
What is our pick of the week?
This is hard this week.
Isn't it?
Yeah.
I think this is the toughest since I've joined. This is...
Yeah, they're all very good. I'm
going to
go
all
Great
excellent
Expectations.
Shows.
I'm going Great.
Are
great
you? Controversial.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I watched the whole thing. I did a Q&A with Olivia Colman, you know.
Okay, yeah. I'm going to go for The Drive.
You're in the pocket of Big Dickens now, so you can't get away
Big
from
Dick's
it.
Pocket.
Big Dickens.
I'm going to go for The Drive because...
That's a good shout. The Drive is excellent. Yellow Jackets are probably the absolute must-see because it's the phenomenon. It's certainly the highest profile, I would say. But they're all must-see.
I think Great Expectations, BBC One Sunday Night, Stephen Knight is pretty Olivia Colman, I think that's pretty high fucking profile.
I mean...
Okay, listen, we don't need to fight about it. Everyone can watch all of them.
Yes.
That's fine.
Yeah. The question is, was Magwitch targeted? That's what I want to know.
Very good.
I'll go for Yellow Jacket, so we've got a clean sweep then. So watch all three of these shows, I would say, this week. I think that is a good week for telly. Oh, who knows, though? Maybe The Night Agent will, in fact, be our pick of the week. Find out on Thursday on Pilot Plus. Spoiler, it isn't. Anyway, that's it for this week's show.
For the record, I don't think anything that's in Pilot Plus should be, like, because we don't get to see it because of embargo, should be allowed to be the pick of the week, because we should... Yeah, they should be punished.
Okay, they should be punished. Yeah. Right, we're punishing the Night Agent, because may or may not be the best show of the week, but they've embargoed it. Yeah, okay. Well, we are done. Do please leave us one of those 5-star ratings, you know, especially if you want Boyd and Kay to be in with any chance of getting some cake. The cake is a lie.
What?
And if you're in the giving mood, please do consider signing up to Pilot Plus for the absolute pittance of $1.99 a month, for which you get even more of us in your ears, not to mention spoiler specials like our Last of Us 1, the You Season 4 Part 2 spoiler special with Penn Badgley that we recorded just a few scant hours ago, not to mention early ad-free access to this very show as well. Do follow us on the socials at Pilot TV Pod, at Kay Ribeiro, at Boyd Hilton, at James C. Dyer. Next week is, quite frankly, an absolute pile-up of shows with Succession, Rabbit Hole, Blue Lights, Kindred, The Big Door Thing, whatever it's called, Bryce? Yeah, sure. 6-4, Unstable, and The Power, all hitting screens.
Bloody
so honestly,
hell.
I have no clue how we're going to navigate that. We're going to have to work that one out. Plus, we should have Toni Collette and John Leguizamo on as well, talking The Power as well. So that'll be fun. We've got a lot to watch. We should probably start maybe now. Pilot out.